great pleasure to introduce Gail from Santa Barbara.
Hey, okay, hi, I'm Gail Jean, alcoholic. And I bring this little thing up to time myself. I turned off the cell connection, but I like to time myself because I think it's really important to tell what what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And there have been times I got caught up a little more in one section or the other. Oh, that turned out to be perfect anyways, you know, but I just like to keep it well-rounded. So my sobriety date is October 11th, 2005, and I got sober in Santa Barbara, and I have a home group, Rigorous Honesty, Wednesday night, and I'm really grateful to be here, and happy birthday. It's right, isn't it great to celebrate these birthdays? I was telling someone before the meeting, I enjoy these birthdays more than my natal birthdays. But then in my sobriety birthday, though, I'm younger, so maybe that's why. And then to the newcomers, show me who are the newcomers, you guys? Okay. So just pay attention. Just listen up. And whatever it is I share, just remember it's my personal story. In other words, I bring to you just the flavor of this alcoholic. But just listen from that step one place, you know? And I hope that's what you hear as a common thread, and then the rest is just, or entertainment or whatever. But just listen from that place of, you know, of step one or whatever step you're on. Let's see. So thank you, Ricardo and Sydney and Nicole, for coming today. So you guys glad to be sober today?
Yeah.
And you probably like to be sober tomorrow, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, a couple of days after that, right? It always kills me when I hear people say, oh, I'm just an arm length away from a drink. And I think, bullshit, the book says that we will recoil from alcohol as if it were a hot stove. And so that's not really true. This program says we get recovered. And I share that because as I go into what it was like, that I'm standing here almost 10 years later and I haven't had a drink, my shit's recovered, you know? Now, if I take one drink, even one, the allergic reaction, you know, like people allergic to shellfish or whatever, you know, you just don't eat it, you know? I have a friend who is allergic, I have actually a couple friends allergic to peanuts and shellfish, and you can't even, you know, they can't even kiss people who have eaten it, right? But only we alcoholics are unique in that the allergy that makes us do things that we seem to forget and that are bad and demoralizing, we keep reaching for it. So I'm recovered from that step, that impulse, that decision. I'm going to reach for it with all the ways it explains in the beginning of the book. And make sure you pick up the book and start reading it. Read it through by yourself and then read it through with someone else with a highlighter. So it's that step between, you know, you get sober enough and then you realize it wasn't good and you probably ought not drink, and then what causes us to drink again, and that's what, for me, that's what this program's about, not taking the first drink so I don't have to get spiritually anaphylactic, you know. So what it was like, I started drinking when I was around, I want to say 12 or 13, but I don't remember, but isn't that apropos for an alcoholic, right? I don't quite remember. I grew up in a college town, UCSB, where the university is, so it's Isla Vista, and back when I grew up there, it was hippie, it was free loving and dancing and lots of drugs and definitely lots of booze. And that's not why I drank, but it was definitely the perfect environment for a person like me. So there was a street called Del Playa, and the thing to do would just be go walk down Del Playa and you know, you just pretend you were, oh yeah, so-and-so over there invited me, you know, and next thing you know, you've got plenty of booze for nothing at all. Although it turns out it wasn't for nothing at all. There was always a price to pay. In my story, it was bad right away. And it was bad right away because the blackouts came out right away. You know, 13, 14 years old, like I don't remember. 13, 14 years old and waking up with big bruises and that feeling like you've been invaded. 13, 14 years old and I'm running away because my mom thinks something's dreadfully wrong with me. And I think something's dreadfully wrong with her. And so I'm running away with all kinds of really crazy ideas about, I don't even know. They weren't even quite ideas. There's just a lot of compulsion. I'm going to do what I want to do. And it's this house I hate. It's my mom I hate. It's this, that, and the other. And along for the ride was always booze. you know, there was always that the drink that that helped me get through something, that helped me wait for something, that helped me celebrate something, that helped me mourn something. I remember going to about 15 years ago, going to my cousin's funeral, and really dear, dear cousin, but he had cirrhosis of the liver, and he's in the hospital with that big belly thing that people with toxic livers get. They look pregnant, right? They look pregnant because everything's just swollen and just nothing in the body's working. And so we're there for his last days, and somebody, he's going to die really soon. And his brother, my other cousin, thought it was a great, you know, idea to help him communicate his last thoughts to us because he couldn't really talk, you know, everything just wasn't jiving. And but he was able, they said, we'll get him a piece of paper and a pencil. Let's see what he needs to, what's the message in the bottle to us? And I'm thinking, I don't know, that's a good idea. And so they did, and what he wrote down was, I don't want to die. And I'm thinking, Jesus Christ, a little late for that, right? So I'm thinking, it's a little late for that. I'm thinking it's ass backwards. But at his funeral, I showed up with a mixed drink in my hand, right? Because I can't make those kind of connections. I can't make the kind of connections where we see someone doing something silly driving, and we think, well, I'm not going to drive like that. Look at it. It causes an accident on the way here, right? There's a big accident. Like, what is it that causes us to get into these wrecks in life? And with the alcoholics, I think at some point we know a little bit, but, you know, there's also that threshold in which if we know enough and are willing to grasp what it is about our drinking that's getting us in trouble, we have to do something about it. So my story goes a little something like, I'll drink over that, you know. So I was able to, in the beginning of my years, I drank for a little over 25-ish years. Now, remember, I started blacking out and doing crazy stuff right away, so... I am definitely one of those stories that I got really mangled, and I mangled everybody around me, you know. You know, I was able to do stuff in the beginning of my life that would be considered successful, you know, school, I had some careers, I had good jobs, I had this, I had that. And my alcoholism at that time, I often say when I read that part of the big book that says, you know, that describes the stages of alcoholism, right, and there's the trouble drinker, the problem drinker, once in a while I'll look at it and say, damn, I should have just stopped right there, you know, I should have stopped right at that part where it's just a little troublesome, and my liver might be a little bad, but I could still drink, but I didn't. I went on to that point, that bitter end, right, where... I can make good decisions, time my drinking, and then the next thing you know, well, I'm sure I'll be able to get up on a Monday morning. I mean, what's it gonna hurt? Barbecuing, why can't I have a drink, right? And but then I'm waking up with a hangover, or I would say, oh, I'm gonna go for a run, I could sweat out the booze, and that was good. You know, there's always some way I could just, like, balance it. I can balance it. And at some point, you know, it gets a little heavy, and the lines between my own morals got blurry. And so it looked something like, you know, the kids are going to my mom's for the weekend, and I, you know, when I call to get them on a Sunday, I'm drunk. And she's like, I'm not sending the kids back to you. She lived next door, by the way. And she says, I'm not giving them back to you. And I'm thinking, what the hell's her problem, you know? That doesn't make sense. And the next thing, you know, time's going on, like, time meaning every weekend I'm kind of doing that, and of course this is fast forward from the 13, 14 year old, but I start doing that every week, and next thing I know I'm drinking at her. So whereas I'm drinking for whatever the evolution of my drinking took me, now I'm, how dare her, you know, I'm going to keep the kids because you don't sound like you're well enough to take care of them. Oh, watch, every Sunday I'll drink just for that, you know, I'll show you. But, you know, still I took care of things, I bought the cars, I did whatever, you know, and then there were the DUIs back to back. You know, the first DUI, if they hadn't made this island in this parking lot a couple of inches wider, I would have never gotten that DUI, I'm telling you. But I backed up, somebody told me that if a light doesn't turn green, you know, you just either come back and go forward again or flash your lights. And so I'm leaving this bar, Mel's, and I'm thinking, I gotta get home, I can't sit and wait for this light all night. So I did that, and I guess I sort of put the tire over the thing, and the cops came, and I was mad. And then a couple of weeks later, I'm in the same neighborhood, and you know what I told myself? I'm in the same neighborhood when I get my second DUI, by the way. I tell myself, I'm not drinking in that neighborhood anymore, you know, because that seemed to be a problem, you know. Drinking's not a problem, but that neighborhood sure is. And I remember I was driving with my best friend. We had been best friends since kindergarten, and she wasn't much of a drinker. As a matter of fact, she was more qualified for Al-Anon. She had a boyfriend who was strung out, and so her deal was, once in a while I'll have a drink, but that's just not my gig to get out of control. And really, that was her deal. Well, that night we went out. She probably had a third of something. You know, I probably finished her drink off. But I'm driving, and we get pulled over, and the cop goes on her side, and I'm just like, and I remember just sitting there tossing my head, and he's like, "Ma'am, you know, can I have your license?" And I'm like. And I said to him, "She's been drinking more than me." And so I tried to convince him that she's the one that's really drunk. And I'm like, right? Back then, that was in, I want to say, 92, 93-ish. Back then, the cops were willing to park your car somewhere, right? I guess they were a little bit codependent, maybe. But they took my car and they parked it and they said, okay, and, you know, you can get it in the morning. And so they hauled me off. And I remember one moment being the cops, like, they weren't being nice to me at all, right? I mean, I can't remember half the days I drank, but somehow I always remember the stuff where I was a victim. But they weren't being nice, and I remember saying, well, I got to go to the bathroom. I just was, like, trying to assert my rights. I have a right. You got, yeah, okay, so you're going to take me in, so all that, but you got to treat me right, you know? And so I asked them, well, I'm going to go to the bathroom, and it was this little kind of a portable kind of little place they were taking people in. And I knew they weren't going to be happy about it because it really wasn't like the place. They wanted me to stay put. But he had to let me go because I had a right. And I went. I came back and I heard them talking. I thought, oh, they're talking about me now? So I think I looked at the guy real crazy eyeball-like and I said, when your life starts going bad, it's because I'm casting spells on you. I mean, it's just crazy. And the guy's just like, man, you know. And I said, and so I'm thinking to myself, yeah, of course, he's scared, he knows. He better be nice, you know. But I'm drunk and he's probably just thinking, you know, he's probably had lots of variations of my kind of drunkenness. And so then I become pretty aware of this. Yeah, I'm starting to see the correlation, drinking, my mom's mad at me more, I'm doing and saying things I shouldn't. That whole telephoning people when you're drunk, not a good idea. But I can argue pretty good, so most people who I've talked to while I'm drunk, I usually can still convince them I was right, even though I was the drunk one. Just things aren't going so good. And so the only thing I can console myself with is by saying, like, well, okay, at least I don't do that. You know, I'm looking at other people. And I used to tell, I think I remember when I came upon that term, periodic alcoholic. I loved it. I'm like, yes, see, that's it. I mean, not only is there a name for me, they expect people to be that way. Why would they have a name for it? And that's what I was. I was a periodic, yeah, of course, once in a while when I drink, you know, I do everything else in life. I can periodically do this. And that worked for so long. I remember sometime after that, just really the demoralization's getting just a little bit more bad, and it's probably because I'm getting a little bit older. I can't, you know, the whole allergic process of alcohol, if you ever look it up, is, you know, it's just stuff can't break down, and you're intoxicated, right? Toxic. And so my sister and I used to hang out a lot, and I remember she loved to tell me stories about what I did the night before. So one day I said, look, we're going to have to make a deal here. I won't tell you what you did, and you don't tell me what I did. But it wasn't so much out of shame, because I sort of overrode that level of conviction that would have prompted me to do something. It was more out of, just don't mess with me, you know? And whatever I do when I'm drunk, I'm really not really responsible for. I mean, right? Because we're checking out. That's like playing tag. It's like, I'm safe right here. You know, give me a couple drinks, and whatever I do is fair game. Plus, everybody's drunk. Come on. Did you see the stupid shit so-and-so did? Yeah. But then I started wanting to jump off piers and, oh, I'm going to swim to the islands, you know. There's just, you know, I just started just doing things that just, like, in the next, like, going out and checking the car. Like, why would anybody go out and check the car to see if there's blood on it? Right? Why does anybody do that? And sort of not even really conscious of what I'm doing. It's like I'm beside myself. There's a part of me that says, you're fine, everything was fine, you know, you got home fine. And the part of me says, without words, just go out and look, make sure there's no blood, you know. But who does that, right? I remember I basically didn't have a license for about 10-ish years. But I managed to buy cars because, you know, they let you buy cars, even if you don't have a license. And when I shopped for a car in 99, it was a 99, I said to myself, I know what I'm going to do. Because it was getting a little old, and one of these days I was going to have someone scalp under my car. I just knew it. And so I said to myself, a keyless car, that's how I'm going to do it. And if I'm so drunk I can't remember the code, that's it. I mean, right? If I can't remember my code, I'm fine. And I don't know how, in the drunken state of mind, I was always able to remember the code. But I would still end up, you know, I bought that car, and I would still end up drinking and driving. I somehow would remember the code. And so my thinking process now is really bad. Decision-making is bad. But I'm just, this head that sort of leads us around through life just wasn't working. And that's just one teeny tiny evidence of it. And I remember another time when the kids are staying at my mom's for weeks now. They're there longer. And I'm just like, you know, screw her. She gets, I remember what I told myself at that point. I remember, because there's that point where you got to say, man, it's been 2 weeks since you've really seen your kids. So I got through that conviction real quick. I told myself, I'm letting her redeem herself. She can have my kids. She didn't take care of them because of how she treated me, right? She wasn't a very good mom, and I'm letting her redeem herself by having my kids. And since she had my kids, I may as well go drink, right? So that's what I did. But the thinking process, I remember one time I was so, see, when I was younger, I would pass out and then black out, pass out. And I didn't do a whole lot of stuff, right? But somewhere in my later years, I was able to be in blackouts and just pull off full out sagas, you know, and I would just do just stuff like, how do you even operate without a mind, right? And I remember one time I woke up and I felt a little wet. And I said, man, did I not make it to the bathroom? I've never done that one before. I hope that's not the case. But I just was a little wet. And I look over, and I guess apparently in my drunk stupor, I had pulled the drawer out of the nightstand, and I peed in it. Now, that's not such a big deal, because I know plenty of you guys who thought closets are bathrooms, right? Or the corner of your room is a bathroom. But here's the plot twist. I thought that the nightstand was my bathroom, but I managed to go to the bathroom to get the toilet paper to bring it back to the nightstand so that I could pee, and right? And there's a moment of like, well, that shit's funny, look. I got like, right? I got this, like, I'm comical almost, but it's really not when you think of like, what else am I getting? I mean, this isn't good. And so, but still, I'm not that person, and I'm not that person. I would never drink and be pregnant. Because not only do we obviously see signs of it says women should not be consuming retarded babies, da da da, right? But it's just like, I just wouldn't do that. There are a lot of things I wouldn't do. That wouldn't be one of them. I wouldn't have sex for money for drugs. I just wouldn't. And I knew it as if I know, as if how I'm certain about some things today, in my mind, right? That's the alcoholic mind. We tell ourselves things, and it's not that we fool ourselves and believe it. I think half the time if you were to give us a lie detector test about the things we say, I bet we pass that test. Because that is our since we are sincere, right? We really mean to say, I'm not drinking today. We really want to be able to say, no, of course I'm not going to drink today. And so there were those handful of very demoralizing things that I said I wouldn't do. And you know, lo and behold, I started doing them. And then there was a part of me that said, man, I don't think I like this very much. But you know, I really didn't have a clue of what I would do about it. And I didn't really grasp that there was an allergic reaction. And, you know, I hear a lot of people say, we drank because we're spiritually sick. Okay, you guys, read through the book. It doesn't say all over the place we are spiritually sick people. Anybody who does anything bad for themselves becomes spiritually affected, right? We're not born into the world with a sick soul and we're doomed to drink. Now, whether there's genetics and that's where the allergy comes and all that, okay, yeah. And, of course, anybody who takes a drink and is intoxicated is, you know, going to be out. There is no reasoning. So we're going to do stupid things, but we don't do it because we're just bad people, right? And it says in the book that we're otherwise really good people. And anyhow, so I feel like I lost my point, so that's okay. Because I'm going to fast forward and tell you about the end. capacity end. And really the last year and a half, 18 months that I drank, and I was also addicted to outside issues that the doctor okayed. Okay, so five doctors okayed it. But anyways, I was pretty marinated, right? And besides myself, and I felt like there were other beings making decisions for me. It came to the point where I would just, you know, look around my house and be like, and when I say look around and have these thoughts, don't think they were like rapid, successive, you know, conversation type of dialogue we can have in our head. They were choppy, fragmented, like I'm listening to somebody speak another language and I'm putting it together. That's how my communication with myself was. But so it came to that point where I would look around, because my kids are, you know, pretty much moved in with my mom, and she's, I'm still letting her redeem herself, by the way, because she owed it to me for the childhood I had. But I look around and say, what don't I want them to see when they find me dead? And it wasn't, in my mind, it wasn't even dramatic. One of these days they're going to find me dead, you know? It's more like, this can't go on. You know, you get that sensation in your body where something's not clicking, right? I mean, not only is it not clicking like you got diarrhea or you're vomiting, you know, because we're all used to that. It's more like it's breaking down, right? Like I'm feeling the pain back here. I eventually end up with gout, right? That's pretty on a mother. I've got sores that are just spontaneously opening on my skin, and I'm just racking my brain. I had to have done something, but no, they're just spontaneous sores. My body's falling apart, and so I just hope, let's see, what should I get? And then there's, of course, a part of me that says, what can I strategically leave for them to find so they can really know my story, you know, poor me, But so it was just a matter of when and how, and that's the hopelessness. And so again, those of you who are new here, you have your own version. You know, they say we all, you know, I hear a lot of people say that moment of clarity, as if those moments of clarity are the catalyst to all of the recovery. Or you hear people say, you know, I knew when, or this time I know for sure. We don't, you know. Until you've done the work, like, and it's simple, until you've done the work, you don't know. And so I was just hopeless, and I thought, this is it. This is the end of the road. And I won't share stories about the very last weeks as far as how my mentality was, but I will say that I was about that close to wet brain. And, I mean, can I honestly say I was able to assess myself? Like, now I'm a doctor. I'm a drug doctor. No. It was more like I look back and I start piecing things together, and you just feel real wobbly. Like, there's things you want to do and executing a plan. Like, the synaptics. You know, we have our little things in our brain that this is, we learn things. We learn to walk. We learn to do this. We learn to do that. Because it's a beautiful brain with trillions and billions of connections, and all circuits are going down. You know, I get this image of those little toys where you push the button, you know, the string toys, the plastic toys, and you push the button and it just kind of collapse, you know? Like alcohol, King Alcohol was just on that button. And I was spiritually collapsed, and my mind was just in a whole other place. And just, you know, I say it was a state of hopelessness, but probably on my last days it was more that other people were hopeless for me, because I didn't even have enough faculties intact to have the kind of self-awareness that I could even say, you know, well, I'm hopeless. You know, it's more like, well, here we go. You know, life support's going to get taken off any moment. I'm my cousin. I don't want to die. It just, everything was at a halt, you know. And so on one of my trips to 5 East, and 5 East in Santa Barbara is the psych ward, which now has become more of a detox place. On one of my trips, because I think I went there, you know, one of these days I tell myself I'll go find out. But more than a dozen times over the year and a half, I'm up there. And part of it is because, you know, before the very, very end, part of it was because, you know, I need to get locked up. Somebody needs to put me away so I can, because I clean up really well. You know, I'd go to the psych ward and a couple of days, and people are looking at me like, oh, are you the nurse? And it's like, yes, yeah, clean up, right? And then I believe it, and then the next thing you know, let me out, let me out, let me out. And not only let me out, let me out, let me out, but I'm not going to drink. Right? You newcomers, right? When you tell yourself that, you're not, right? You're just not. You're not going to do it. And you just know it. But it was like whiplash. Like someone just came up from behind me, did this to my head, my neck, and somehow there's booze, and I'm drinking again. And it talks about that in the big book. It says we just, you know, the truth of the matter is if you were to ask me, you know, well, what'd you do it for? Why did you do it? And I'm always weary when people relapse and come and they give you a whole detail of how it went down. It's like, no, you don't know. You give yourself way too much credit if you know why and how it all went down. It wasn't the guy. It wasn't the this. It wasn't the that. It says in the big book that we drank because of the effect, and it says, and more importantly, we drank because of the craving. So there were brownies there when I walked in. They looked delicious, and I'm thinking to myself, if I have one, right, the phenomena of craving is going to kick in, and I'll probably look around seeing whose brownie I can take. You know? No, this is true. And if though any of you, you know, I know a lot of us, and some of the old timers will tell you when people get like, well, I don't know, you know, like if there's a big, well, go out to the bar, and if you can stop, that's great. My hat's off to you, right? Okay, I think that works for some people, but I think some people just don't realize that they just have not grasped that, you know, when that craving, the phenomena means we don't get it. We really can't understand it. It's a phenomena, right? Kicks in, there is no reasoning your way out of it, and that would have happened with the brownies, so I didn't have any, and that's what it was like with alcohol. And so I'm going to I'm going to the 5E's, and I'm meeting people, I've got family basically kidnapping me, bringing me out here to this recovery home, and I'm just sitting there like, this place is a dump, and I'm just like, you know, I'm sure I'm going to stay here, and they get brown bag food or whatever, you know, they put into the food bank to get food, like, what kind of place is this, right? But I kept going to these places because before the end, because I just knew that something had to stop. I ended up pregnant during my last year, and I said, oh, man. And I found out I was in 5 East in the psych ward, and they would call us up, everyone get in line, you come get your pills, and, you know, Padilla, nope, you go over there. I was like, maybe I'm going to get some special pills today, you know. And there were people there that here we are trying to get clean and sober, right, but we would be hustling each other's pills. I mean, you know, because you don't know. It's not even like I'm going to come up here and try and run game. It's like, man, a part of you just says, God, just make me safe. And then a part of you just starts to go into that mode because the phenomenon of craving has a way of just, I will get it somehow. It's like if they talk about people in the desert when they're really thirsty and there's no water and they see the mirage, it's like, we'll figure out how to make that sand water, right? And so they said, no, Padilla, wait over there. And the doctor calls me in and, you know, he says, you're pregnant. I said, oh, man. But then I got excited. I said, okay. I told myself I would never drink when I was pregnant. I am good. I'm good. And I called, you know, I called my husband at the time. I'm calling people from 5 East, hoping for people to be congratulate me, right? Guess what? And they're just like, okay, so I knew, in an abstract kind of way, I knew I was in trouble when this happened. And I hope some of you can relate to it. When I called my conservative, right-wing, Republican, Christian brother and told him I was pregnant, and he suggested abortion, I said, oh, man, well, you know, you'll go to hell for that, you know? You're going to go to hell. You can't tell me to do that. But he had just saw disaster written all over it. Mm-hmm. And in my state of mind, I could not put together this puzzle that said, you don't have your kids. You've been drunk for a long time, you got gout, you got this, you got that, and you're in 5 East Psych Ward calling people hoping they will pat you on the back and say how happy they are for you the way your life is going. Right? At that time, it just, I was just devastated that nobody was supporting me. Really, I was. I was devastated. But it wasn't the kind of devastation where I said, oh, I gotta go have a drink. It was like my soul just said, wow, what? And I think part of that devastation was a little bit of a soul part of me trying to say, come on, you can do it, pay attention. And but this was a godsend. I was pregnant and everything was going to be good. And, you know, and I got out and I went, had my friend pick me up because everyone had pretty much abandoned me. Social services had told my husband, look, if she goes back to the house or if you are at the house with our other two sons, we'll take everyone away, all because of her. And actually, the day when they did that, as a matter of fact, they pulled that stunt while I was in the psych ward another time. and I wanted to leave. And they told me, if you leave, we're going to enforce this, where he has ultimatum. If he stays there with the kids, and I said, you know, screw you. Nobody tells me what to do. No, I'm leaving and I'm going home. And guess what? They did what they said they would do. They took the kids. The husband had to go. And in the long run, it was, you know, good that the husband went. But anyway, so on this other occasion, I'm pregnant, and my friend comes and picks me up, and I get to her house, and I am just crawling out of my skin, just like, oh man, I was so uncomfortable. I had no one to talk to. Maybe somebody did say something to me about how that's a symptom of my disease. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it would have helped or if I would have been able to comprehend. But I can just tell you the awareness of just that feeling of just, God help me. Oh my God, this is horrid. And I said to myself, there's no way I could be expected to not drink. People would understand. It doesn't matter that I'm pregnant. And I crossed that line. So fast forward it, 9 months-ish. But I'm going back to 5 East a couple more times. And on 2 of the back-to-back occasions, I go in, I'm there for 10 days, I clean up, and in my mind, I'm going to do it. And I'm going to, right? Newcomers, we're going to do it. And it's 10 days, you know what I mean? Of course, I'm already off to a good start. And I get out, and then within hours, I was in my house, I got my prescription of outside issue, but it wasn't enough. And so I found the other prescription I had from one of the other doctors, and I said, well, let's see. I'm 7 months pregnant. And I said, I'm just going to go up to this local bar. I'll go over to Long's. I'll drop off the prescription. Oh, now I've got some plan. Right now I've got some game. I'll go and, but I had 10 days of not drinking, so that probably helped. I'll drop off the prescription. I'll go to the bar. I took a couple of the ones I already had of the other stuff. I'll have a few drinks. I didn't show. My pregnancy didn't show. So at 7 months, I don't even know if I look chubby. But, you know, I'm drinking the whole time. I'm sick. I'm losing weight. I'm dehydrated. So the bartender still served me. So I'm waiting there, and I have a couple of melon balls. Okay, maybe like 5 of them. And all I remember is, oh, it's time to go get my other prescription. I'm so excited. I'm going to get that prescription. And after that, it's a blur until I remember, and this isn't that I fully woke up. There's just a glimpse, like a dream, where you're like, oh, hey, look it, I'm here. I look up, and I'm being wheeled off by the ambulance, because in Santa Barbara, there's this mesa, which is this sort of hill area, and that's where the bar and the pharmacy was at, and then down below was where I had to go to get home. And so apparently, you know, I'm driving, I black out, and coming down the hole, I go into a wall, and I'm totaled. Cars totaled. And so I wake up to this glimpse of like, whoa, you know, wait, am I home? Are they taking me away again? And it's like, oh no, this is, I kind of see my car, and then it's a blur again. And the next several days are blur because they've got to, you know, they got to keep the 7-month pregnant mother on lots of systems and stuff, you know, to make sure the baby's okay. But here's the catch, because the demoralizing part can get even worse, right? But here's the catch. Apparently, my husband at the time had decided to take the kids to go get some McDonald's, which is right near the bar I was at. And he's driving them up, and they say, look, Mommy, right? So when I hear this, because the next couple of days, my mom and people are like, Jesus, really? Like, they're like mad now. They're past that frothy emotional appeal, right? Oh, come on. My mom one time handed me milk in the Days of Wine and Roses movie, and she says, go get sobered up, you know? They're way past that. They're like, man, like, they're just, like, angry at me. And it just doesn't faze me. And when I look back, and I'm trying to have a little compassion on myself, not condoning, and not saying it's okay, but when I look back, I think, I couldn't have. How could I have lived and faced that, you know, to really embody what my kids might have felt when they're like 4 and a couple years old, you know? They're going to get McDonald's. Okay, I know McDonald's ain't great, but it's a happy meal time for them, right? And then to see mom. And really, I think they probably didn't, you know, at that age, sometimes the trauma of those events happen more when people tell you how bad they are, but it doesn't matter. This is what they saw. This is what my life came to. And I'm getting wheeled off. And so I'm there for a while, and I'm pregnant. I got a broken collarbone, which is still kind of crooked. And I remember I'm back up after I'm in the hospital part. They said, look, you want to give it one more try? Like, they're asking me, right? I'm thinking, like, I think now you should put the chains on me. Don't ask me. But they said, you want to give it one more try? And I said, yeah. So here I am, you know, days apart from being let out to go back into the psych ward. And, you know, and I remember one of the nurses, like male nurse, was doing my vitals. And he's just kind of like looking at me kind of a little bit of crazy eyeball. And I'm thinking, well, you're rude, you know? Like, you got to treat, you have rights. You got to treat me. I'm a patient, blah, blah, blah. And all of that's true. I'm not saying just because we're alcoholic, you know, we somehow are sub-citizen. What I'm saying is that I could put my energy there for that purpose. Just speaks to how our minds can work. So I'm kind of mad that we used to treat me, and then and so I'm kind of saying little remarks to him, and at one point he just put his stuff down, and he just burst in tears because he was disappointed and discouraged. He had this job that held this level of hope that what he was doing was helping people, and to see this pregnant mother do this, he just was, it just challenged his whole career. And I didn't see that till later when I had a chance to do amends that wow, that really fucked with his head, you know. But that's what it all came down to. And so, you know, fast forward a little bit more, I go to deliver the baby, and I remember a couple of days, and I don't even know how I managed this, but a couple of days before they were planning to do the cesarean, I said to myself, I don't want to go to jail, and I don't want to get in trouble, so whatever it takes, I cannot drink or do anything, because they're going to take all your blood samples, right? And so I didn't. Which really turned out not to be a good thing, because when I go in then to deliver, and they don't know this, right? I didn't come in and check in and say, okay, well, I haven't, you know, I'm drinking this much now, but I've been off it for 3 days, you know, I'm not trying to disclose all that. But really, it put my life in the balance because, you know, we hear about alcohol withdrawals and all that. Well, couple that with now a major surgery. And so I ended up in the hospital for a couple of weeks with the baby, and you know, until the day they let me out, I never really told them, because I didn't want to get in trouble, and that probably would have changed the course of things a little bit from a medical point of view, but they just had me on, you know, they don't know what's going on, what is wrong with her, you know, but I was, you know, withdrawing, and so I go home, and I think, okay, I'm going to go home, and this is it. This is what I think to myself, you know, I've been sober for a couple of weeks, you know what I mean, you know, this is good, and I'm going home with a baby, and I'm going to get support, and it's all going to be good, and so I'm living near my mom's, and I'm home with the baby, and he's tiny. The doctor said, oh, a peanut. He's a little baby. He wasn't very nourished in my womb. And I remember seeing my ex-mother-in-law driving by with my kids to take them to visit my other kids at my mom's. And instead of having what some people might call the moment of clarity, it was more like, fuck them. Really? I've got the new baby. And they're going to go and, I mean, I was just devastated. But really, I was more hurt. So, you know, a lot of people say they have this and that with their bottom. Some people, their bottom is the second hangover. Some people, they slept with someone they didn't know, that's their bottom. You might say that my bottom was loneliness. Like, oh, shit, the very thing I didn't want to happen, which was be alone and die alone and all that lonely stuff. And here I was. I created the loneliest state of being I could. And I had this, contrasting that with the new baby, which should be nothing but joy. I just was like, oh my God. So I decided I should probably have a drink to keep my nerves down. And the last thing I remember, because it was like a couple of days of binging, I just remember, I guess I was supposed to go to some meeting with social services to, there's going to be a powwow. You know, you can have your mom, you can have people here, everyone's going to decide how to make you better. Everyone's going to sit around and try to give enough frothy emotional pill that you'll do it right, because they don't altogether understand our disease. And I didn't show up, and so they got worried, and they saved my baby's life because we aren't just bad people. And so I went to nurse him when I was drunk, and apparently when the two of them walked in, all I remember was one of them yelling at, because it's like cotton in my head, just like this, right? And I hear one of them yelling to the other person, go. It's like a, you know, talking, I can't really hear nothing, but what the hell you do in my house? I got rights, you know, get out of my house. But the one was yelling at the other one because I was, you know, my good intentions as a drunk mother was to nurse my baby, but I was smothering him. And then they saved him, though. They took him, and they were able to take him to the hospital and hydrate him. And they took him, and the only thing I can do, and I think the only thing any alcoholic could do, was just stay as drunk as I could for the next couple of days, right? Because first of all, I've got this craving. First of all, I've got this, I'm already marinated, intoxicated, and I'm lonely, and this is a shitty life. And oh my God. And so I'm out there for a couple of days, and the very last day that I drank, I remember waking up, and I had gotten a bottle of 82 of Outside Issue. And on this morning, I remember like, oh God, and I'm not even really thinking the baby's gone. There's not even any emotional ability to have comprehended and had a thought process about it. And so I go to reach for a couple of my Outside Issues, and I shake the bottle, and I'm like, whoa, like who ripped me off, you know? There's like just a couple. And then all of a sudden I get these goosebumps, and I think, whoa, wait, 80-something, there's like four left. And for a time, I thought I was dead. Now, if I had any sense, I would have realized I got goosebumps. You know, my adrenaline's rushing. I think I'm dead. That would have been the clue that I was probably alive. But I didn't know, you know. And remember, I had all those thoughts about, you know, what would happen when I died. Well, that was one of the ways I thought it might happen. You know, I was going to take too many of those Outside Issues and I would die. So I'm laying there, and of course I pop them real quick because, you know, if I'm dead, I may as well take a couple. But what I really want to know is, am I dead or alive? And so I'm like, well, how am I going to figure this out? So I thought, well, and I was really careful not to get myself in trouble with all the pharmacies, right? So I said, well, I got to be careful. I call, but I needed to know. And so I do whatever I have to do to confirm. And they, to this day, I don't really know what happened to them. I was on a 20, 30 a day of these Outside Issues. It's possible maybe I got lucky and I'm alive. Maybe I'll find out I'm dead and people will start walking through me. I don't know, you know. But all I know is I said, well, I already took the Outside Issue, but I know I can't drink. I mean, at that point, I'm realizing all the other stuff is bad, but I know this alcohol shit, man. I don't know. So I just won't drink long enough to see, and once I get verification I'm alive, then I'll just be fine. And some little ladies who were coming to my house to bring me food from the local church, because those are the only people who visit me, with this handful of women. And you know, when it says in our big book about a God of your understanding, it's your own understanding, which means don't fuck with anybody else's understanding, right? It's all of our own understanding. It's that thing that keeps us here, you know, and you know what it is. So if I want to call it something, whatever, Buddha, Allah, this or that, leave me alone, and I'm going to leave you alone. But I'll see it in your eyes that you got it, and you'll know it in my eyes that I got it. And you'll know when I'm not smothering little babies that I got it, right? But anyhow, these little women, and it also says in there that we should also be, I don't know the wording because I'm not a page person, but it also says that we should see where other religious people, they got, I mean, come on, they ain't drinking like us, right? They must have something working for them. So we're going to go condemn them. And so these little ladies were coming and had been bringing me food, and I remember when one of them came, and to this day, actually, she's one of my dear, she became like a surrogate mother, my dearest, dearest friend. She came and she just hunched over and she got this food to feed me. She's like, where's the baby? She's so excited to see the baby. And I want to say that I cried, but I really was still quite dehydrated. So it was kind of like teeny tears, but my soul was crying. And she's like, what happened? And I told her, I said, they took me. And the first thing she did was hug me. And she said, let's pray. I mean, I look back now. Then I didn't know. I thought, you know, I don't know what I thought. I probably didn't think much. But I look back and I think, that's it. We should be clear to see where religious people are. That was good shit right there, you know. So let's pray. And they just started loving me up. You guys love me up, and that's not because you don't do what you say about loving us until we love ourselves. I just hadn't been in relation with you yet. So these, my higher power sent these little old ladies to come love me up. One little lady sent a card. She was one of the bigger, taller, older ladies. But so the next couple of days, they're kind of coming and going with food, and they're just making sure I'm okay. Right? Imagine that. They're making sure I'm okay. Like, and as I'm sobering up, and they're making sure I'm okay. It's not bewildering. Like, oh my God, thank you so much. It's like, whoa, wait a minute. Did you not hear? They took the kid, alcoholic. This isn't good. They didn't even want to hear that. One of the ladies sent me a card, and she, I guess she was at church with her choir. It was so cute because I remember I opened the card, I got in the mail, and I opened it up, and she wrote the whole, oh, Gail Jean, I was thinking about you, and I hope you're okay. She writes a song, and I'm like, oh, how cute. And on the other side was her little personal message, and she says, so here's the deal. God loves Joseph more than you. He'll be fine. You'll be fine. And I'm just thinking, what is that all about, you know? And next thing I know, a couple of days, I mean, I don't know about you guys, but as an alcoholic, I never thought twice when I would tell when people say, how are you? And I said, oh, well, I'm good. I haven't drank for 2 weeks or a couple of days. You know, I never thought that that would strike people as, what? You know what I mean? Oh, I haven't breathed in 4 hours, but everything's good. You know, it's like it was a big deal that some days that were going by. And so I had this notebook of all from all the times that I was going to the psych ward. Because my intentions were good, right? Newcomers, we really want to make this work. But that's just it, though, right? We want to make it work. So I had all my notes from every time some counselor took me aside and said, okay, well, there's Casa Serena, there's this. I remember one time when they gave me a pass. They gave me a pass from the psych ward to go interview at the Casa Serena, and my sister could come pick me up. I got a day pass from the psych ward, right? And I tell her, well, if I'm going to go interview, I probably ought to go get some clothes to change because I wouldn't want that. As if they expected me in a suit and tie or dressed up, right? I don't want them to see. But the thing was, I wanted her to go by my house so I can grab my outside issue. And I did, and we ended up having this big chase scene where she grabbed it from me, and oh, was I furious. But anyhow, I get that notebook, and I'm looking, and all of a sudden, it's like these notes are like, I guess the desperation kicked in, and I just said, I got to make something work, even if it's just to get on the right track so I can gracefully get off that track. I need everyone off my back. I think there's a baby somewhere. You know, I don't know. And so I just started opening that book, and I'm just like calling this person. What do you mean you don't have room? How do you not have room? I mean, if you're out, to, so I'm going through all that. You know, remember, I'm still sick in my head. And then I call the same place I had a field trip to from psych ward, and they said, yeah, okay, come talk to us, and we'll see what we can do. And when I got there, do you know they heard the whole story about me getting the day pass and being chased and chasing my sister? I was like, geez, little gossipers, you know? So in their minds, they're thinking, this is a sick puppy right here, you know? And it's funny because a lot of people, I'm a big fan of traditions, and I'm a huge fan of anonymity. And that's just because I've seen that go wrong in so many ways. I know it says at the level of press and public stuff, but I just don't tell anybody's business about anything. But anyhow, so I don't even know where I was going with that, except that I go there and they tell me, look, we got a bed for you. And it was like three plus weeks since my last drink. And I'm thinking, oh, that's not going to happen. Like, really? Like, how many weeks? And the lady says, look, we just don't have the beds. And so here's what you're going to have to do. Go to meetings, which is like, wah, 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 right? She starts spelling out what I got to do. And it's like the peanut gallery, wah, 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 wah. I'm just like, okay, here. And there was that moment. I don't remember how the moment came, I just know in retrospect, but where there was a potential for this to be another one of those entries in my notebook of how I was going to do it. And I can't tell you why, except I just had that feeling. And so I remember I told her, okay, I don't know, we'll see what happens. And so now mind you, when they took my son, I just had this illusion everything was going to be returned to normalcy and there would be a celebration. You guys would be helping me out, and not you guys, my family. And so for that reason, these wonderful church ladies got me a breast pump so that I could, you know, keep everything going. I mean, I was as if this is I am going to get my life back. And I remember, so after the lady told me I had to wait, so I go home, I'm like, okay, I got to wait. What do you do when you wait and you're trying to sober up? And what do you do? Okay, she said, go to meetings. Okay, that's what. So the little church lady said, look, we're having this Bible study. Come sit with us. And I'm thinking, okay, I'll go. I mean, I think I should go, right? Then I'm just trying to have more, like, you're playing tag, and all of a sudden you've created 20 safe spots for yourself, and everyone else got only one. Like, I need to create safe spots. I'm safe. And so I start going to those, and so I'm home, and I was like, well, and so I start pumping, and I remember all of a sudden the machine that I'm doing to do the breast milk started making weird sounds. Now, mind you, part of my attempts to get to try to get out of the state of alcoholism was there was one point where I said, if I just go crazy, then I won't be responsible, and I won't even know I'm a drunk, right? So there were times where I literally just tried to just help myself go over the edge. So with that said, here I am doing this machine thing, and I'm probably 9-ish days sober or something like that, and all of a sudden, I swear the thing starts talking to me. And I'm thinking to myself, oh, God, now I'm going to go crazy? You know, now I'm finally getting sober, and now I'm going to lose my mind? But it makes total sense, right? Because we don't deal too well with some of these things, and we don't deal too well partly because you know, we're maladaptive, we got some other stuff, not because we're soul sick, it's because we just, we're different people, right? And all of a sudden this thing just starts talking, and I'm thinking, oh, here I go, oh my God, that's going to suck, I'm going to go into loony bed sober, you know, I've never done that before. So I remember thinking to myself, it was a weird kind of decision, because I remember thinking to myself, put the machine down and walk away. That would be like what we now know the next right thing. Put it down. But then there's another part of me that earnest part of us, our alcoholic minds, that says, no, you're going to do this and you're going to be ready for your son, and that's the right thing to do. And I just said, oh, hell no. Now I'm having this debate in my head, and something's probably in the balance here, which is lies and me and my life. And I just fell to my knees. I said, I don't even remember there being quite words as much as this sense of, some people might call it surrender. I think it was just a kind of like a dream. Have any of you ever had dreams where you're falling and you realize, oh, shit. Well, you kind of know it's a dream, but you may as well just keep falling, right? It was that feeling of just, like, my life as I know it, I'm done. I don't know what to do. I think I'm going crazy when I'm not supposed to. My kid's not here. So anyhow, I made it to the entry date. And the church women kept coming and being by my side, and you know, I was told, do whatever they tell you, and you know, and don't never say no. I was given all the cliches, which back then I had issues with a lot of them. Now I don't love them all, and some of them I just think are wonderful. If you got to live by cliches for a while, do it, right? But I was desperate. I said, if nothing else, my ass better be honest. And part of my, I wasn't born a noble person. But my ability to be honest with people had more to do with, because my mom used to make me think that she could read my mind. So I wanted to get a jump on her, like just tell on myself. So that was one of those character defects that worked in my advantage, because I would just face it, because I thought people knew anyways. And so my relationship, my sponsor was great. I would tell her what I was thinking, and she would tell me I was nuts. My first sponsor would almost always tell me, it's your ego. And I'm just like, you're like, she's got something wrong with her ego, because she keeps telling me it's my ego, you know? So I kind of did all that stuff where I would just sort of like bracket some of the issues, like, well, you know, when I'm done with all this and I got my life back to normal, I'm like, this craziness, I just, you know, you critique the sober houses, you critique that, and I was just like, you know, I'll put it aside for now because it's probably a good idea, but no, I don't, yeah. But it saved my life, though, sticking around. People said, just stick around, and, you know, they're saying, don't leave until the miracle happens, and to some of the newcomers, that might seem like you get an idea, like, what does that mean? If I stick around, if I win the lottery, then I'll be sober forever. It's different than that. It's more like, don't leave until you know why you're here. Don't leave until you're on the same roll and the same momentum in the direction of spirituality and happiness. That's all the miracle. We get what a lot of people already have in this world, which is sustainability in this world, the ability to be in life, the ability to love people, the ability to look your kids in the eye. Now you're the better parent than you've ever been. Now you're making amends to your kids. Now I'm, you know, at one point I'm doing inventories on my own kids. You know, that's all a miracle. That's a big-ass miracle, you know. I know a lot of people talk about when they get into to AA, and this is great. I know a lot of people talk about what they've got, what they've done, right? And this, I've done that, and I get where they're going with that, right? That we can actually pull things off, and that is true. But for me, I had all that stuff, and losing it didn't do anything for me. So I don't tend to really talk about too much of what I got, because I do have things and places and stuff, right? But it's that other miracle stuff I just mentioned. It's the ability to just really be present, you know, to really be able to be in my own skin, which is so different than that day where I thought I was just going to have to peel my skin off, you know. I'm comfortable. And all of that has gradually changed over the time since I've been in the rooms, and it's been a result of what it says in the big book, you know. I mean, I know it says more will be revealed, and I know there's a lot of people have different ways or twists on, you know, we'll write 20 pages and then you'll see that your life is manageable. And I'm thinking, no, it just says if you start and can't stop. And if your relationships have gotten kind of weird, and we all know when all that's happened, it's really a lot more simpler than you think. If you can just say to yourself, no, I don't stop. And hey, you know, things haven't gone good with so-and-so and so-and-so. Just concede your innermost self that that is the truth. and there is no 20 pages of convincing anybody, right, then you guys would be lawyers. But we're not. We're not. We just have to know that we have an allergy, and we will go soul anaphylactic if we drink. And so I worked the steps, and I'm not even going to say to the best of our ability, because beware of that cliche, because that was some gray area when you say the best of your ability. Because between Wednesday and Saturday, the best of your ability can vary according to your mood, right? What that means is you just give it your all. And you'll know, because it talks about, in the big book, it talks about having our conceptions, which means how we view the world, how we conceive of things, right? That they will just be totally picked up, put over here, you know, that go and dump them all, and then come over here and get some new ones. And that can't be comfortable for anybody. Look at a little 2-year-old throw a fit, right? When they don't get their way. Somebody's messing with their conception of everything's mine, right? And then they throw a fit. Well, that's what we do. So I'm not suggesting you have to be in pain to know you're doing the work, but you probably aren't going to be too comfortable. But that's okay, right? That's growth. That's where I find the humility. That's where I find that all the things I drank over, oh, my God, I can live through that. I can live through that? I mean, really, some of the simplest things, I can't believe it. That I live through it. Simple things. And then there's major things that there's just been a level of grace that is just, and it's like, thank you, higher power. And by the way, my higher power rocks. And so I did the steps to the best of my ability, and I got a level of spiritual shift. I was spiritually awoken, and that's a hard one to explain, to say, what does it mean to be spiritually woken? All I know is, for me, it's like the one and only driving ticket I ever got, and it wasn't sobriety, by the way, was because I woke up late from a nap, and I had to go do something, and I was groggy, and just kind of a little like, you know, but I'm responsible, and I do the next right thing, and I went to go get there, but I wasn't all the way awake. So spiritually awake would be to have, right? You're just awake. You know you're awake. And people do tell you that. Although I gotta say, I did not like it when people used to tell me, oh, you look great. I'm like, well, screw you. What did I used to look like? Well, now I know what I used to look like. But you'll know, because people will tell you, you'll have more time on your hands. I have more time on my hands and in my mind, because I'm not causing as much shit. I'm not plotting out as many schemes. And since I've done my first step, I've done a handful of more. And so the ability I come to those steps with each time is a more spiritual, a little more awake, right? And I do remember doing a set of steps that just rocked my world. I was doing the fear part, and I didn't realize, you know, here I'm a couple years into sobriety, and I did not realize that that I was afraid to the extent that fear is felt by most people, because I grew up with fear, and you dealt with it, and you don't show people you're afraid. And I realized through this inventory that my ass is afraid of a lot of things. And a couple years into sobriety, I'm actually afraid of you guys, you know? I'm afraid. So I remember sitting in my house, because I often did that. I did a lot of praying, a lot of meditating, and then just trying to get the best out of this. And I called my sponsor, and I said, nah, do I really have to do this part? I mean, a couple years sober, and I'm really, really, really want to know if I can get away with not having to do that part. And she says, well, you know, she always had this thing where if you get off course, don't worry, your higher power has a blueprint for what you're supposed to do from there. It might take you 20 blocks to get where you need to go, you know, or it could take you one block, whatever. In other words, she was entrusting me to my own higher power, and then she was going to help just sort of, you know, help me along the way a little bit. And I decided, I said, you know what, screw it. I'm going to do it. And I sat there, and I remember just the tears. And I said, because I'm writing down what it is I'm afraid of, exactly what it is I'm afraid of. And it's like, wow. And there's a part of me that starts to actually love myself a little bit, like, well, no wonder you drank. No wonder why. That makes total sense. Like, that's why you did all that you did. And not in a condoning or minimizing way, but, you know, we create these lives for ourselves that are, like, here's the irony. We don't like our lives messy, but we create lives for ourselves that are super messy that we really can't navigate through, right? But I did the inventory, and I finished it. And here's the realization I got, and this is why I tell people, do the steps in the order. If you're a newcomer, don't be talking about making amends to anybody. You're not ready for that, you know? And I don't mean like, because we have and I have. I mean, really, you want to do the steps in the order. Because when I made a decision, I will do this fear inventory, if I had not had not my sponsor, who was helpful, if I had not had my higher power, And now we're talking steps two and three, right? If I had not had my higher power, I probably would not have done it. I would not have finished that set that really, really catapulted me into that fourth dimension. That really, and that was like a whole new birthing experience. I did it, I finished it, and then when I had the chance, I read it to my sponsor, and it was like, man, this shit is good. You know, it's like, and since then, I continue to do the work. I go to meetings. I have times when, there have been times where I'm like, do I really got to do this AA thing? There's times when, like, I'm doing inventories on meetings. Screw you guys. You need to be act right, and I won't have to do inventories on you. No, I do what I got to do, but I'm honest with my sponsor about it. I tell her, look, you know, would it hurt if I don't go anymore, you know? And so I just, it says that if we're honest with ourselves, we can get this. A person who's mentally ill, like the kind of mental ill, not the kind when we're in our drunk stupor, but the kind that's really chemically, you know, mental people that really qualify. It says if they can be honest with themselves, they can get sober. So it's just, say it before your mind has a chance to filter or alter it. Say what you got to say to whoever it is you've entrusted yourself to, sponsor, and then it'll be your God, because I go to my God for a lot of things. But what I know is I have done it that way, and life is beautiful. And now I used to be, now I'm motivated by happiness, right? I think about, I love being happy, right? Although things happen that, you know, I'm learning, there's different areas of my life that I work through, but overall my life, just like it says in the big book, I am really happy. And that is my goal. I like sustaining that. Whereas when I first got here, it was fear of, you know, oh, I want CWS off my back, I don't want this, I don't want to get in trouble peeing dirty. You know, the fear kept me, okay, that's fine, but I can't imagine having spent my, up to this point, being motivated just by fear. And I don't have to. And that's the nice thing. It says that we are not a glum lot. We are recovered, and newcomers, you don't have to pick up again, period. Just do the work like it's laid out. Get somebody who has what you want and do it. Just do it. And tell yourself if at the end of this it didn't work out, well, go back out and do it. Do your other thing, you know? But don't say, hey, it didn't work unless you do it. Because that, I have to say, that is my pet peeve when people say, hey, it doesn't work. No, man, you got to do it. And so my life has been good, and I continue to do it, and I love to come share. And I must say, as I end right now, I'm thrilled that I got to speak on Mother's Day, right? I mean, that to me isn't like a moment of, ta-da, I did it. It's more like, this shit works, right? Liver, pump, gout, sores, killing my own kid, right? And here I am on Mother's Day going into my 10th year. So I'm not going to say, well, you have what it takes, you don't have what it takes. You're here right now, and all that matters is you're here right now and you're hearing it. Do it. That's all. And let it work for you. And then if it doesn't, it doesn't. But if you thoroughly do this and are honest and give it your best shot, you will probably have the same kind of miracles that I have had. And I'm grateful for all of you for being here. I'm grateful for you having me here. And thank you.
Just say another round of applause.